Fancy a game?
Looks like Tarzan plays like Jane.
You know, I could probably shoot him from here. I'd be doing us both a favor.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, Las Vegas.
Yeah, I didn't come up with another joke again.
We don't really have a great, like, Jared's dropping his sunglasses on the mic. That's good.
Yeah, this isn't, I feel super prepared for today.
You look ready to go.
Yeah. I didn't at all forget the order which you told me to have things ready.
Bob Scucci will join us a little bit later, so we'll talk to Bob, get an update on how much better the Golden Knights are in the power rankings at the sports book. I think they're like massive favorites against the Blackhawks tonight. We'll get to a lot of Golden Knights today, actually. But we're going to start with some UNLV basketball. Don't really have like a great like headline, main topic, grab your attention type of thing, which is probably bad job by me. But we're just going to do a few random things for UNLV basketball, like rotations. Because I've been critical of Marvin Menzies' rotation so far.
I thought you wanted me to play the sound.
No, not yet. Not yet. I've been critical of Marvin Menzies' rotations because, you know, his starting lineup's been outscored all season. I think Amori Hardy's the best point guard on the roster, but Noah Robotham's still the starting point guard. Why is Ben Coupette playing in the final 10 minutes? Why is Jonathan Chamwechachua playing in the final 10 minutes over players that are better? How is Bryce Hamilton not getting more minutes? Yeah, critical of that. So yesterday, I asked Marvin Menzies about his rotations, and basically, does he like want to get to a point where he has a regular rotation? Because right now, it's just sort of like, uh-oh, somebody get in there. Somebody else messed up, so here comes a substitute. So I asked him sort of like, do you want like to have a regular pattern, or do you just want to play it by ear every game?
Eventually, yeah. Eventually you look to have – I think that is kind of, you know, morphs throughout the year. I thought I would actually – I would have hoped to be in that now, right? But we haven't had the consistency from some of the positions that have allowed me to really settle in towards – a rotation of 9 or a rotation of 10 or what have you, so, or 8 for that matter. It just depends on how guys play. We still have guys that are really battling practice and doing some good things in practice, so opportunities are presented when you make themselves for yourself. So we're still looking at the overall rotation to find out what we think will be good for us in the long term. We really want to get ready for conference. It's obviously your end game is to win conference or to compete at a high level in conference, and so we want to do that, and we're still searching a little bit, but we're really searching for consistency. Consistency of play individually, which will inevitably give us a more of a consistent rotation.
So we're 25% of the way into the season, and Marvin Menzies doesn't really have his rotations down, and he says in there he wishes he had it down earlier, that guys had played their way into it or that he had figured it out. It kind of sounds like bad coaching. Like, he doesn't know who he wants to be playing in certain situations, but I'm kind of okay with it. And it's kind of in the context that we talked about, what was that, Monday? About the moral victory against Cincinnati and just this, the idea that this non-conference schedule this year doesn't matter, like, in terms of wins and losses. And even if we go back to the beginning of the year when we talked about sort of, like, success for this team, the thing that I pointed out is what I want to see as success is Mountain West play. Be good in the Mountain West. Like, win half of your games or more in the Mountain West, something that UNLV hasn't done in, like, 5 seasons. And so I'm kind of okay with that answer. Like, I'm kind of okay with Marvin Menzies taking the entire non-conference schedule to figure out what his rotation is going to be. And, it doesn't sound great when you're a quarter of the way through the season and your coach is like, yeah, we don't know. I don't know who to play where. But I don't think it's that big of a deal right now, because I think conference play is the only thing that's important this year.
All right, not to be the, you know, the glasses half full type guy, but if you win in conference play, you have higher seeding in the conference tournament, and therefore you have a better chance of playing against teams that you've already smoked.
Yeah, that's why conference play matters.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm kind of okay with it.
But, like, now, in the future, we did our timeline yesterday and put it at, what was that, 2020, 2021?
Yeah.
In the future, non-conference has to matter. Because in the future, you're playing for the NCAA tournament and you're playing for an at-large berth. And you have to have a good resume to get into the NCAA tournament. So in the future, winning in the non-conference matters. Playing good teams in the non-conference matters. Having your rotation ready to go before the eighth game of the season matters. This year, it just doesn't as much. Now, you can take, oh, well, you can't figure it out this year. Why do you think you can figure it out in the future? That's a fair thing to ask, but in the future, it'll matter. It's a very short-term view that I'm giving you of this. Like, yeah, the rotation doesn't matter. Let them figure it out for three more games. The thing is, though, is that they have, what do they have, five more non-conference games. So he doesn't really know what his rotation wants to be in seven after seven. Is he going to have it figured out after five?
Well, I think we are seeing certain, like, we are seeing minutes shift, aren't we?
I thought, so, like, Shagnon Dembele has sort of begun to get drowned out of the lineup, or the rotation, I should say. Jonathan Chama-Chachua was, and then he played the last 9 minutes, basically, against Cincinnati. So that one was strange to me. So, yeah, we have to some degree, but it's still, I mean, you just pay attention to the way Menzies substitutes. His first substitutions of the game, like, normally, like, when we talk about rotation patterns, normally that's the easiest one to have a pattern in. It's like, all right, after 4 minutes, this guy's coming in for this guy, and that gives us, you know, a decent second lineup. But for Menzies, his first substitution is almost always based on which one of his starters screwed up the most in the first 2 or 3 minutes. Like, that's what it is. You make a mistake on back-to-back possessions, and he's coming to get you out. So, and that's sort of what ends up happening the entire game, and that's why there isn't any sort of consistency, because Menzies substitutes based on, oh, that guy's had a couple bad possessions in a row, let's get him out and get somebody else in, and they've had some bad games where guys have lots of mistakes, so it's just a continual cycle. So, I don't know. I think it's fair to question if they'll figure it out by Mountain West play, because how good is this team and how good are the players? Like, is anybody, because Menzies will always say the players determine who plays. Like, that's what he loves to go to. Like, guys will play their way into their roles. What if they don't, though? Like, what if they all just kind of keep playing inconsistently and having bad turnover games, and it's like nobody played their way into it? That's when the coach has to make the decision and say, all right, this is the one that I think is going to break through, or this is the lineup I think that's going to work the best. And we haven't seen that yet.
What about Ntombwe?
He's interesting. I like Joel Ntombwe.
Me too.
I think he should play. I do not think he should start. He doesn't really play starters' minutes. He starts games in second halves, but he only ends up playing, I'd have to look up what he averages, but I'm guessing it's probably 17 or 18 minutes a game. The thing that's interesting to me with Ntombwe is, like, if I were coaching UNLV, Ntombwe would be a power forward, and that's the only place he would play. But Marvin Menzies likes to play big, so Joel Ntombwe plays small forward. And that's where his role ends up being on the scene. Like, I don't think he's played power forward at all this year. And I don't know. We'll see where it goes. Like, so if we did sort of the best five, like if I were saying this is the best five I want to see out there, Amori Hardy's my point guard. Bryce Hamilton is on a wing. And then for now, I'm going to put Noah Robotham on the other wing. But there's not a big difference between him and, like, Chris Clyburn. Like, you know, give me one more bad game and all right, Clyburn will slot ahead or something like that. But we'll stick with Robotham for now. And then Shakur Jusen and Baki Jong inside. I think that's sort of your best five. Clyburn maybe subbing in for Robotham there. And then you start trying to look at rotations. You have Clyburn as sort of that first wing off the bench. In Minzy's system, Tomboy's a wing, so Joel Ntombwe comes off the bench as a wing too. And then in the front court, I would love to see Tervell Beck as, like, the only big man that plays off the bench. Like, he comes in for Jusen and plays power forward, or he comes in for Jong and Jusen slides to center.
That's the exact thing I want. I want Jusen at the five. Like, slide Jusen over to the five on the first, like, at the first possible, like.
Yeah. So I would, that's something I would love to see. Menzies, he's done that a little bit, but he won't do that entirely. Like, you're going to see Dembele still play some minutes because Menzies loves his true fives, and apparently we might see Jonathan Chama-Chachua play some true five because that's what they did against Cincinnati. So yeah, but that's sort of what I would think. The interesting player is Trey Woodbury. And sort of where he fits into this, because we're talking about a 4-star recruit who can apparently shoot the ball, but he has a knee injury before the season, so he misses the season opener and is sort of working his way back into it. I asked Marvin Menzies where Woodbury fits in.
He's still very much in the mix. You know, I'm not looking at Trey as a one and done type player, so I want to make sure that, you know, I do the right things for the team but then also by every kid, which is a challenge for a head coach, right? Because you want to play them all if they have earned that right to play. You know, Trey missed a lot of time, which 4 or 5 weeks of practice, which set him back a little bit. To be honest, he was probably in a position to play more minutes early had he not been injured early. So it's kind of stunted his playing time. But I'm very optimistic he'll be a contributor this year. I don't have any reason to think that he won't.
I don't know where Woodbury fits in. Like Menzies says he's optimistic that he'll be a contributor this year. I don't know where it is. He's played a total of 17 minutes. He hasn't scored. Like he basically hasn't played this year. The big concern is defensively. Is he good enough? It doesn't, you know, we've only seen 17 minutes, but it doesn't look like he is. I would love to see him fit in somewhere because he has offensive potential that this team might need, but I don't know where it is. Like if you're going to start Joel Tomboy, like in their current starting lineup, the perimeter players are Robotham, Clyburn, and Tomboy, and then it's Hardy and Hamilton coming off the bench. He's not taking Hardy or Hamilton spots. Like, those are your two best offensive players. He's not taking those two guys' spots. So he almost has to take one of the starter spots if Menzies ever changes his starting lineup. And I don't think it's Clyburn. Like, I don't think Woodbury gives you a better chance than Clyburn does. I don't think it's Noah Robotham either. Like, yes, Robotham has struggled to shoot, but I don't think he's given you a better chance than Robotham does. Then there's Tomboy, and, like, I don't think he's getting playing time over Joel Tomboy. So, like, I don't know where he fits in. Menzies says he's going to be a contributor, but I don't know where it is. Now, UNLV shooting 28% from three this year. That's 322nd in the country. So if that continues, it might be, good Lord, Trey, just go shoot and make some threes, please, because nobody else on the team can. But I don't know where he is. Some more breaking news for you.
Yeah, this was disappointing.
Bryce Hamilton. So we talked, was that this week or last week, about his nickname. A couple of you on Twitter keep telling me you want to call him Hammy. Bryce Hamilton's nickname being Hammy. So I asked him yesterday about nicknames.
Do you have a good nickname?
B-Ham.
B-Ham. How do you feel about the nickname Hammy?
Yeah, that's pretty good, too.
All right, you're good with Hammy. All right, I just got people trying to call you Hammy. I don't know if it's a good nickname or not, but you're on board with it.
Yeah, I like it.
All right.
So he's endorsed it.
So disappointing.
So we're going with Hammy, right?
I'm going with B-Ham.
You're going with B-Ham?
Well, that was the first thing that came out of his mouth.
Yeah, his nickname, but he's okay with Hammy. He liked it. He was intrigued.
I don't know. To me, Hammy is like, if his last name was Hamilton and he was like a 6'11", 325-pound center, I'd be like, yeah, we could call him Hammy. But the fact that he doesn't look like a Hammy.
Technically correct. Brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try out the Be Connected sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
So. I love you. I love this guy.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
UNLV football has the second lowest salary pool for assistant coaches. The first one, man.
That is in the Mountain West. 1.37 million.
I thought you were implying like some like Division II school was out. Anyway, I'll shut up.
1.37 million is how much they're paying all of their assistants. Only San Jose State is worse off in conference. Cheap in that regard. Nevada also is. 1.39 is what they're paying assistants. They made a bowl game though. I think there might be a reason. These are, by the way, from USA Today. They put together these lists of coaches' salaries and stuff. there might be a reason to question them because Tim Skipper, who is the defensive coordinator at UNLV, which you would assume would be the first or second highest paying assistant job, was listed as making $23,000. And that just cannot be right.
Well, actually, not to Will actually you, but isn't it normally the strength and conditioning coach is the second highest?
No, it is always the coordinators.
Okay. I don't know. I read some articles on the strength and conditioning coaches and how they keep, like, the second highest paid, I believe the second highest paid public official in Iowa is the strength and conditioning coach. I could have that stat completely wrong, but these guys, somehow the strength and conditioning coach never gets fired, continues with the next staff, and so continually gets to get raises.
Yeah.
I could have that wrong.
So yeah, Tim Skipper apparently doesn't make very much money.
Still makes, never mind. I was going to make a very bad joke.
If you look at the Mountain West, so the USA Today, they do this with head coach salaries. They do this with assistant coaches. They do this with revenues and expenses. And I probably will talk about it every single time they put one out because I love the context it gives you, because you can see, oh, UNLV is spending less on assistant coaches than pretty much everybody else in conference. Now, Boise State leads the conference. They only spent $2.3 million. So that's not a huge gap.
Yeah, that's not that much.
I mean, it's $1 million, but it's not a huge gap. Like, Colorado State's at 1.9, Wyoming's at 1.9. They were second and
Air
third.
Air Force.
So Air Force actually isn't on these because they're not a public institution. So they get to skip out. But if you do it sort of nationally, LSU, Clemson, and Auburn all have an assistant coach that makes over $2 million by himself. So those guys are making more than all the staffs in the Mountain West are.
It's almost as though college football generates huge amounts of revenue.
There are 21 assistants that made over $1 million, and
it's great when you don't have to pay the employees.
Would you stop going off on rants that have nothing to do with UNLV?
Ever.
The context nationally is like UNLV is with the whole coaching search stuff that doesn't happen because Tony Sanchez still has a job, but like UNLV fans want, like, oh, go hire Les Miles. Go hire the Washington defensive coordinator. Like, that's not going to happen. There are 94 assistant coaches that make as much or more than Tony Sanchez does. So, like, if you're a coordinator at a Power 5 school, you're already getting paid what you would get paid to coach at UNLV. So why would you, A, take a pay cut in a lot of cases, but why would you take the UNLV job when you can make that much money being a coordinator and just wait for an actual better job to open up? So, like, UNLV cannot, like, they're not in the range to hire a coordinator from a Power 5 school. Even the lower, like, some of, like, it's Texas Tech, it's Arizona State, it's Cal, it's Maryland. Like, we're talking about lower tier Power 5 schools that are paying assistant coaches more than Tony Sanchez gets paid. So, like, you couldn't even say, oh, Kentucky had a good year, let's go get their defensive coordinator. No, he's making more than Tony Sanchez.
And it's also, you have to inherit a 5-win team.
Yeah, like, they don't want it. They would no reason to want it. It's a better job to be a coordinator in the SEC than it is the head coach of UNLV. So there's just, because, oh, yeah, I got a funny tweet I wanted to read, too. This is from @butta1231. This is after we talked to Jeremy Moss, and we mentioned that UNLV fans wanted Les Miles. He tweeted at me, we moved on from Miles and now want Urban.
Oh, God. I would take Urban. The LA Sparks have hired Derek Fisher as head coach.
To ignore what you just said, Urban Meyer would fit in our six-step program to cheat UNLV to the top.
Yeah, I know.
Replace Bobby Bowden with Urban Meyer? Okay, all right.
Hire them both.
Okay.
Since we somehow have unlimited money.
So Derek Fisher, it's not really a Las Vegas Aces news, but that's the biggest rival.
Yeah, okay. I guess.
Now they have a former NBA player and coach as their coach. Now he and Bill Laimbeer can fight on the sidelines.
Oh my God, we need to hire Matt Barnes.
No, they're okay now.
Oh.
They're okay with each other. I had the same thought, but no, yeah, Matt Barnes and Derek Fisher are okay. Their feud is over.
Can we get it restarted? Illinois lost to Ohio State 77-67.
Illinois is now 2-7 on the season. UNLV's next opponent, by the way, on Saturday. They've beaten Evansville and Mississippi Valley State. UNLV's better than both of them. All seven of their losses are top 100 teams, though, so they've had a tough schedule, but not a good record. We'll ask Bob here in a little bit, but UNLV's probably going to be the underdog here against Illinois, I assume, even though they're 2-7. Well, it's funny. They played Ohio State in the second half. Their second leading scorer fell and hit his lower back and was, like, down for a long time. He had to be helped to the locker room. He missed 17 seconds of game time because he ran right back out of the locker room onto the court. Like, they stopped the game for 10 minutes to help him get up and walk back to the locker room. And then he's like, oh, I'm good to go. Let's do it.
Hoy. Nevada transfer McLean Mannix says Jay Norvell misled people about his transfer.
So we talked about Jay Norvell, the head coach of Nevada, yelling about transfers, and he's mad that his guys can transfer without going through him. Was worried that the group of five schools are going to become a minor league system for the Power Five schools. He did not specifically name names, but he did complain about players not talking to him before transferring. So McLean Mannix put out a statement through Nevada Sportsnet. I'm going to read part of it for you. I would like to clear up any confusion about me not going to Coach Norvell and telling him that I was going to transfer from Nevada. I went to Coach Norvell's office Monday after the banquet to let him know in person, and he was not in his office. I immediately texted him and asked to meet with him. That's when he told me he was out of town recruiting, and Coach Mummy called me directly after that, and I explained the situation. So he tried to tell his coach was gone, and instead he told his position coach.
Also,
and then Jay Norvell, a couple days later, says, these damn kids don't talk to their coaches before transferring.
Also, they don't have to.
No. So it's
get over it.
And, like, so McLean Mannix put out a four-paragraph statement about this because he wanted people to know that he did go to try to talk to his coach before he transferred, even though Jay Norvell is like, oh, these kids don't have to talk to me anymore. But the part that really makes Jay Norvell look like a moron and a dictator is that Mannix spends half of this statement explaining why he's transferring. And he's transferring because his mother apparently had a really bad accident and she suffered fourth-degree burns on her back. He was playing in Reno. His mother apparently got PTSD because of the fires in California. And she would get PTSD when she would fly out there because she'd go watch him play. And she was worried that she was too close. So he was like, I can't play out here. I need to go play somewhere where this isn't going to be a problem for my mother. So Jay Norvell goes out of his way to moan and whine and complain about transfers. And what it forces a 20-year-old kid to do is put out a statement about how his mother had this terrible accident. And, like, he's got to explain all this trauma. Like, Jay Norvell's a moron. Like, what is he? Like, he put that kid in the worst situation he possibly could. And that kid's like, no, guys, I liked being here. I'm not leaving just because I want to go play at a Power 5 school. I tried to talk to my coach. He wasn't there. And I'm leaving because my mother has serious problems, and I'm trying to make it easier for her. Good job, Jay Norvell.
Reed Duke has been called up to the Golden Knights.
The original Golden Knight. He was the first ever player signed by the Golden Knights. But this is the first time he'll be, like, on the roster for a regular season Golden Knights game. I'm pumped.
The only disappointing news about this is that Carr got sent down.
Is that disappointing?
Well, it makes my he's the only Carr that we cover that's good joke a little less, you know, fun.
I am happy to see Reed Duke here. I really hope he plays potentially on the third line. Because Carr got sent down. It's just fun because you have an expansion franchise, and so you have all this new stuff. Everything is new. Everything is the first time. He was the first player, but he's never played because he was in the minor leagues all of last year. So I really want to see him play.
Max Pacioretty is a game day decision for tonight's game versus the Blackhawks.
Yeah, so the Golden Knights, that's what was said yesterday. They are starting practice soon. So there'll probably be an actual update on this in a little bit. But he missed Tuesday's game. Didn't really say what it was. This is a tweet from Jesse Granger. Max Pacioretty said he tweaked something in practice, tested it out today, said he feels better, says he'll test it out again tomorrow to see if he can go in the game.
A tweet from who?
Jesse Granger. Oh, my bad. The Athletic. So if Pacioretty plays, if we go back to Reed Duke, if Pacioretty plays, Oscar Lindbergh or Reed Duke would be on the third line. So you're probably playing Lindbergh and Duke as a healthy scratch. If Pacioretty is out, then Reed Duke is going to be in. And he'll be on the third line. So is it mean to kind of hope that Max Pacioretty doesn't play so we can see Reed Duke?
I don't know if it's mean, but I would rather him be 100% healthy, especially coming into the end of, like, heading towards the end of Hanukkah. The Golden Knights are not projected to have a top 50 in the 2021-22 season.
I forgot the word player. Top 50 player is what's supposed to be in there.
Yeah, I was like, they're just not going to have a top 50?
Yeah, yeah. So The Athletic, the website, not the person, is doing like this massive future of hockey series. Like, they've got one, like, they had a panel with a bunch of people, and they're like, what's hockey going to look like in 2067? But they've got a bunch of stuff where they're, like, looking 3 and 5 years into the future, and they did, like, a power rankings for 3 years in the future and stuff like that. The one that I found the most interesting, though, was this one that was about players and projecting the top 50 players in 2021-2022. Connor McDavid's number one. Alex Ovechkin is off the list because presumably he won't be playing anymore. Sidney Crosby falls all the way down to 20. No goalies, by the way, just skaters. And there's not a Golden Knight in the top 50.
So that means they whiffed on what? Glass, Brännström, like all of these dudes?
Yeah. I mean, not necessarily whiffed, but they're not going to turn into superstars.
Well, but the point is you're going to have 32 teams by that point. Shouldn't you have one guy?
Yeah, everybody should basically have at least one. Most should have two. He did. So this was from Dom L. He did a statistical model to come up with this. He did have honorable mentions. So there were 15 honorable mentions. Jonathan Marchessault was in that. So one of 65 is what the Golden Knights have. But the reason this is interesting is I don't think the Golden Knights will win a Stanley Cup if they don't have one of the 50 best players. Like, they probably won the Stanley Cup if they don't have one of the 20 best players. 10 best players. Whatever. The only way is if your goalie is the best player and he's not accounted in these rankings. So, like, George McPhee has built a roster, and he has a lot of good players, and he doesn't have very many bad contracts. Like, most of his contracts are pretty good in terms of price, and the guys have long-term, even if the guys don't get any better, it's still going to be a decent contract. But the problem is they don't really have that top one or two stars on the team. And, like, maybe Marchessault continues to be awesome and gets better over the next few years. Maybe it's Alex Tuck who gets it. Maybe it's Nate Schmidt. Like, there are a couple guys that could, but it just looks more and more like the Golden Knights, they need another player or two to be awesome. Like, to become, like, they need to go get, whatever, Erik Karlsson or somebody that's like, oh, that guy's the best player on the team. Like, they need to go add two of those. And then they'll win a Stanley Cup.
Can you remind me to tomorrow ask Ryan, has there ever been a Stanley Cup team that was just a bunch of, like, mid-level dudes?
As we ingratiate you into hockey cliches,
yeah,
that's one of, like, the common things is, like, you have to have the stars to win it. You got to have, like, two great centermen, two great defensemen, and a goalie.
So there's no Detroit Pistons of, like, the early 2000s.
Yeah,
that
not
are
really.
Okay.
Doesn't really exist. Bob Scucci, sportsbook director for Boyd Gaming, will join us next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Time to get an update from the sportsbook with Bob Scucci.
If you had this year's Duke team playing the 1990 UNLV national title team, what would the line be?
Oh my God! I really like that 90 UNLV team, and I still see Anderson Hunt. I still talk to him quite a bit, so he's going to kill me for saying this. But right now, Duke looks like an NBA team. I'd have to make them. I'd probably have to make them at least a 6 or 7 point favorite.
Brought to you by Boyd Gaming.
Bob Scucci with us now. So given that Duke lost to Gonzaga, is Gonzaga a favorite over the 90 or 91 UNLV team too?
No, I'm going to have to redo that whole thing now.
We're just trying to get you in trouble.
Yeah, I know. I like that UNLV team better and better now.
Okay, there we go. Everything is
He's
fixed
back
itself.
On board.
Yeah, exactly.
So if we start with a little bit of hockey, Golden Knights. Actually, let's go back to Tuesday. They play the Capitals. It felt like a big game. Was the handle indicative of that being a big game too?
Yeah, it was a pretty big game. The handle was probably a little bit better than some of the other Golden Knights games. So I think we're starting to see that pick up again that kind of we saw last year where the interest started to increase with each game. So the handle was pretty good.
So they play the Blackhawks tonight. What is the line? How big of a favorite are the Golden Knights?
They're pretty big favorites. -260, which means they're almost a 3-1 favorite, 2.5-1 favorite over Chicago.
So people still supporting the Golden Knights with that number?
That scares them off a little bit. You know, they'll bet them on the puck line where they have to lay a puck and a half, and they get a little bit better odds on that.
So they've won 6 of their last 7. When teams go on a winning streak like that, how quickly do you guys adjust them in terms of your power ratings in season?
So, what we do is we just take into account what we think the betting public is going to be doing. So when a team is on a streak like that, we know that the betting public is going to ride that streak for as long as they can. So we make adjustments. There's no point spreads in hockey like there is in the other sports. So what we do is we adjust that money line up a little bit higher than it normally would be. So in this case, Vegas against Chicago would normally be about 240, 230. So we've adjusted them up to about 250, 260, and just make the adjustments on the money line.
All right. So Golden Knights with 2 games, and they're winning now. Which is Golden Knights winning again? That's not good for the sports book, is it?
No, as long as they keep winning and the betting public jumps on them even more, and then they win some more, it's kind of the snowball effect.
All right, if we look at the NFL, did you guys need the Raiders to cover against the Chiefs?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was one of the big ones in the afternoon games for us.
How surprised were you that they did cover?
I turned the game. I got tired of watching them, so I turned the game off when they were down 10 points, and it looked like they were going to just kind of roll over. And then the next score I saw was 33-30, and then I turned the game back on again. So I was pretty surprised that they kept it as competitive as they did.
I think we can make "I got tired of watching them" the slogan of the 2018 Raiders.
Pretty much. We need them every week, and we were lucky enough to get the cover with them last week.
They play the Steelers this week. I'm curious, how big is the James Conner injury in your eyes?
What a player means in terms of a point spread is different with each line. So in other words, if the game is a -3, the ratio is a lot different than when a game is double digits. So in this case, the Steelers were about an 11.5-point favorite. So James Conner was worth about a point, meaning the Steelers are now a 10.5-point favorite. It wouldn't be a point difference if the line was 3.5 going down to 2.5, because that's a much bigger line adjustment than going from 11.5 to 10.5.
Gotcha. So double-digit underdog for the Raiders, is it still all Steelers support?
It is. There's a couple of sharp guys, some professional handicappers that put down some big money on Oakland earlier this week, but it's still overwhelmingly all Pittsburgh money. And again, this is going to be one of those the afternoon games, which tend to be a little bit more volatile for us in the sports book than the morning games, because there's always just a few of those afternoon games. So this is going to be one of the big ones for us.
One of the things I'm always curious about, coaches getting fired middle of the season.
Yeah.
Packers fire Mike McCarthy. What did you guys do with that for the line?
So it's different for every team, because how a team responds to the firing of coach or coaching staff is going to be different in every scenario. In this case, I think Green Bay was in such a dysfunctional state that I think they're going to respond pretty well to this, at least in the first game. So We made an actual half a point adjustment upwards to minus six on Green Bay. They opened up five and a half. We went up to six on this. Now they are playing Atlanta, so and Atlanta's another team that seems to be kind of trending downwards. But in this case, I think Green Bay and particularly Aaron Rodgers and some of the skilled players respond pretty well to this.
One other question: probably the biggest game of the week is the Rams and the Bears. Mitch Trubisky looks like he's going to be back. What does a Mitch Trubisky mean to the line?
Yeah, that's pretty big. And again, you know, we tend to think of point spreads in terms of scoring. You know, scoring occurs in threes and sevens for field goals and touchdowns. So this went from being more than a field goal favorite for the Rams to just under less than a field goal favorite. So he's typically worth 3 to 4 points in this situation. If it came out that he was definitely out, we would have seen this line going up to the Rams minus five and a half. So we kind of expected that he was leaning more towards probable than being out. So this line was kind of made with him more in than out. The Rams minus three, but a lot of the money's coming in on Chicago as the home dog in this one with Trubisky playing.
How little does like an Andy Dalton do to the line?
He's zero. Yeah, the Bengals, we've written the Bengals off, so they can put anybody back there. You know, it's kind of the same with the Redskins quarterback situation. Whoever they put in there, Mark Sanchez, they want to get E.J. Manuel, whoever they want.
So if we look a little bit at college basketball, UNLV covered against Cincinnati. Did you guys need them to cover?
Yeah, we did. You know, Cincinnati's a top 25 team, and that was a pretty surprising, very, very close game. UNLV getting the cover in that one. They played well. They played well towards the end. Came up a little short, but that was a pretty good game for them, and them covering was pretty good for us.
If we look at their game against Illinois, Illinois is only 2-7, but they're still going to be favored by a decent amount against UNLV, right?
Yeah, because they're at home, and their strength of schedule, you have to look at that as well. Playing in that conference, 2-7, and some of their teams that they play, I don't think that's real indicative of them being that bad. So they'll be a little bit of, they won't be a big favorite, but a small favorite against UNLV at home.
Probably somewhere in like the 6-point range.
Probably less than that. I would say probably in the 4.5 to 5 range.
Okay, and then. Nevada, top 10 team, top 5 team now. They are playing Arizona State in Los Angeles. What are you guys expecting the line on that one to be?
Well, I tend to think that they're playing at the Staples Center, which is more of a Pac-12 team. Even though it's technically a neutral site, it's more of a more of a home game for Arizona State. Two undefeated teams. I think Nevada is still going to be probably in the 4-4.5 point favorite range. They're still, top 10 team. Arizona State, ranked a little bit less than Nevada, but they're still playing well. This is going to be a great game, great matchup.
Bob, if we had our listeners come up with a prop bet for the college football national championship, and you picked the least stupid, could we get it on the board at Boyd Gaming?
We've done that before. Yeah, I think we could. I mean, as long as it fits all the Nevada regulations and parameters, you want to come up with a prop, and it's not, like you said, the least stupid prop, we'll put it up on the board.
Okay, we'll have to come up with a good one for you. We got some time, because the college football national title is like basically in the next season from the regular season, so we got time.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Bob. We'll have you some good potential props sometime soon.
I'll look forward to it.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks.
All right. You're excited about that, aren't you?
Well, I'm excited that we actually planned ahead for something.
Did we plan ahead? That was like a in-show planning.
Yeah.
Happy Hanukkah. Are the Golden Knights in a playoff spot?
No. No. They are not. They have not been in a playoff spot one day of Hanukkah yet. So the Golden Knights, 31 points, 2 back of the Sharks for the last spot in the Pacific. They've played the same amount of games as the Sharks. They are also 4 points back of the Anaheim Ducks. The Ducks have played one more game than the Golden Knights. They're also only a point ahead of Edmonton, and Edmonton's played one fewer game, and they're 3 points ahead of Arizona, and Arizona's played 3 fewer games, so they're in danger of being caught and pushed down even further in the Pacific. If you look at the wild card, they are only a point back of Minnesota, but Minnesota's played two fewer games. We need to figure this out. All right, so this whole are they in a playoff spot thing? Are we going off straight up point totals or like points per game?
Man, we really should have came up with that before we started this
whole thing. We'll ask Ryan that tomorrow. And we'll let Ryan make the official ruling on that. But just because, like, there's a chance that they end up with more points than Minnesota and would have the final wild card spot, but Minnesota's played two fewer games or something. So technically, Minnesota would have a better winning percentage and a better points per game.
Yeah, I think that we're going to have to bring in Ryan on this.
Bring in our expert on both Hanukkah and hockey. Last night was not good, by the way, because there were three NHL games and the Pacific Division won all three of them. So the Golden Knights didn't get a lot of help last night. Tonight, there's only really two, maybe three relevant games. As far as the playoffs, obviously the Golden Knights play Chicago, but Minnesota's playing at Calgary. So there's a good chance Minnesota loses that one. Arizona plays against Washington, so Arizona conceivably can catch the Golden Knights here before Hanukkah's over. So there's your Hanukkah update.
Mazel tov.
I've been told that that horn is really loud.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't want you to change it, though.
Okay, well, I'm looking at the meter, and I'm like, we're not redlining.
I've just been told that people have looked at their phones as if something was wrong with their phone when they heard that noise.
Good. That's what we're going for here.
All right, I've got one other thing on the Golden Knights here. Bill Foley, owner of the Golden Knights, he told Senvin that he does not believe Vegas will lose any of its staff members to Seattle. Here's his quote. I don't see that happening. We take really good care of our people, not just the players. I don't see anyone leaving, but if someone decided they wanted to go, we wouldn't stand in their way. First off, the logic part of it is like, the Golden Knights just had an awesome expansion team. Of course, Seattle would be like, hey, let's go get some of those people that just did that. But Foley doesn't expect people to leave, which is interesting. Is he going to give everyone a raise that gets a job offer from Seattle?
Well, I mean, the biggest people I would think that would be, you know, under the microscope as let's steal them is the social media team. Because the one thing that the Golden Knights did really well was, like, ingratiate themselves.
They fired that guy halfway through the year.
Well, I mean, really?
Yep.
Because the current guy is pretty good.
It's just one of the media relations people.
Well, there they go. Okay. That person. Watch out. They might run away.
Kelly McCrimmon is the assistant GM of the Golden Knights, and he has long been speculated as a candidate to become the general manager of the Seattle team. I would assume Vegas loses people to Seattle. Like, as much as Foley is like, we take care of our people, I would assume Seattle comes and hires somebody from Vegas. But here's my question. Why would Seattle not just go after George McPhee?
Interesting.
Like, he's the general manager that just constructed the greatest expansion team in the history of sports. You're an expansion team. Why would you not just say, hey, George, we'll double your salary?
I mean, how deep are these pockets?
I mean, the Seattle ownership group is like 30 people. Like, they've got a ton of money. It's just Bill Foley here. I mean, Bill Foley's got a ton of money, too. But conceivably, Seattle could outbid for George McPhee. And I don't know, like, why would they not do that? Why would they not just say, hey, that guy did it really good. Let's get him. Let's do that again. Because here's the thing, and The Athletic wrote a good story about sort of Vegas's place in the expansion draft, because they're in this weird spot where they don't have to expose a player. George McPhee might wreak havoc on this expansion draft. Like, he might somehow be a workaround for teams that Seattle doesn't get a very good deal in some of these expansion draft picks because of McPhee. So hire that guy. Like, I don't know. If I'm Seattle, that's be the first place I'd look. I'd be like, hey, George, you want to come do this again? We'll pay you a whole lot more than Bill Foley did.
Tyler, you're a bitch.